Abner Meyers is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sports commentator, and most importantly, dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is a pro at entertaining the world, both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook with Abner Meyers, we'll hear from Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who made him the boxer and the man he is. They'll talk about things like the state of boxing, Abner's journey from a kid on the streets to a boxing champ, sports, music, culture, family life, and a ton of others. So make sure you listen to On the Hook with Abner Meyers wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes in English drop on Tuesdays and in Spanish drop on Wednesdays.
What's up, guys? This is the Uncontested Podcast, covering the Oklahoma City Thunder. This podcast is ran by Jacob, Nick, Justin, Taylor, and Kamiar. Listen to future episodes on your favorite podcast streaming service like iTunes or Spotify, and don't forget to leave a 5-star rating.
This is Lou Dort. You're listening to the Uncontested.
What is up? Welcome to the Uncontested Podcast. We are part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network and the official podcast of BoomtownHoops.com. I'm your host for the evening, Jacob Niffen, and joining me, not another uncontested host tonight, but we have a special guest, part of our Blue Wire family, host and writer for Bulls HQ Pod. Welcome, Mark Karanzoulis, to the podcast. Mark, how you doing, man?
Good, Jacob. How are you, mate?
I'm doing well, getting by, you know. So if you guys haven't already listened, I appeared on Mark's podcast, The Bulls HQ, whenever the Bulls hired Billy Donovan. Mark and I had a great conversation. I really enjoyed hopping on. And I told him he had to repay the favor for me. So here he is, and here we are. We will be talking some Bulls and Thunder trades tonight, which I am very excited to see, Mark, if we can make a deal.
I'm pretty keen too, mate. I think I've got one deal that we could probably agree to, I reckon, which we'll certainly get into. But it'll be interesting to see if we can maybe conjure up a few others.
Definitely. I'm super excited for it. So before we get there, though, a few things I want to talk about before we start the trades. First, league-wide. John Hollinger recently dropped an article on The Athletic, really mapping out the timeline of the next season of the NBA. Obviously, everything is up in the air with the COVID stuff. The one thing we do know for sure, it's in the books, is November 18th will be the draft. But John has mentioned that we should get tax and cap dollars, the dollar amount, they'll set those levels probably by the beginning of November. And really, no teams can really do transactions or really start to talk in depth with trades until they know those numbers. So that'll be a big day. November 18th for the draft. It's looking like around November 30th or December 1st for free agency. And then maybe the biggest thing, John had mentioned around the league, there is a growing belief that opening day for the NBA next season will be Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which would be Monday, January 18th. Mark, do you think that we're actually going to get basketball in January?
I want to say yes, and based on the timeline that Hollinger is sort of reporting on, we would assume that timeline seems to make sense. It sort of follows the rumblings that have sort of been occurring from a number of outlets, I suppose, over the last few weeks. So I would hope so, but you know, based on the COVID world that we live in at the moment, it's hard to confidently say that yes, we'll be getting basketball in January, and you know what that looks like, how it looks like. Is there going to be fans in the stands? Are we going to be doing some sort of other bubble type arrangement? Maybe not one massive bubble, but you know, sort of hubs here and there. I think the NBA will definitely be watching a keen eye on how the NFL sort of goes through this, and then maybe how other leagues around the world are sort of handling it. But who knows with this whole COVID situation? I just can't confidently say anything's going to happen with any certainty at this point. But I guess the first step in all that is just getting through the NBA draft, through free agency, etc. And I guess it will come down to basically where the COVID situation lies in America come January.
Let me tell you something. The COVID situation in America has not been good, and I don't have a lot of faith that over the winter time it's going to get any better. So fingers crossed, though. I mean, by January, we could have like a vaccine in emergency authorization and really be looking at maybe getting fans in the stands in the second half of the season. Maybe the owners decide they want to push the start date back to March to increase the chance that they'll be able to get fans in the stands and capitalize on, you know, the millions and millions of dollars that they make off the door and off concessions and things in the arenas. So it's going to be interesting, but for our sanity, especially for your sanity, I at least got to cover a team that played in the bubble. I don't want that to sound shitty. I don't mean that to sound shitty, from your viewpoint of not getting to cover a team in the bubble, and you've gone, what, it's been almost 10 months now since the Bulls have played like a meaningful basketball game. Like, I don't want you to have to go like 14 or 15 months without the Bulls. Now, obviously, you've had the coaching hire and things like that, but that's a lot of time to fill.
Yeah, look, I mean, meaningful Bulls basketball games, it's probably longer than 10 months, to be honest with you. It's probably been a couple of years, but so I'm sort of built for this at this point. But yeah, I certainly take your point. I mean, by the time we come around again, if it is January, the Bulls wouldn't have played since March sort of thing. So that would be, you know, 10 months there sort of thing. So for me, you know, it is what it is. I don't mind. But for the players themselves, like for a rebuilding team as well, like time is sort of important and time is sort of somewhat ticking. Now, you know, Kobe White isn't going to go from a 20-year-old to a 25-year-old. At least I hope that's not how bad the COVID situation is. But it's just missed time, missed reps, and it's just missed opportunities for these guys to get better, particularly in this sort of rebuilding environment. So it's just delaying that sort of process, delaying to see what sort of team we do or don't have, and maybe just delaying understanding what, you know, Arturis Konashovas, Billy Donovan, etc. will be doing with this ball club. So from a fan standpoint, that's the intrigue for me. But from a player standpoint, these guys haven't played for ages. So I can't even imagine being an NBA player, particularly one like from the Bulls, who hasn't played a professional game in so long at this point.
Yeah, definitely. I think you hit the nail on the head there with, you got to get those game reps for those young guys, for the development, for the experience, for the confidence. You have to get those game reps, and going that long without those game reps, especially, I mean, obviously the bubble worked out the way it did. The bubble was awesome, but the bubble brought the best 22 teams down to Orlando, and those best 22 teams are teams with vets and that have experience. The teams that got left out, the Bulls, I think of like the Atlanta Hawks. Teams like that are teams that are very young that probably needed that experience to play those games and didn't get it. So I wonder if that's going to set those teams back much. It's going to be fascinating to see moving forward. So for all of our sake, I hope we get basketball in January, even if it's fanless and it's just players playing in home markets but in empty arenas. I still hope we get basketball. So let's shift over to some Bulls talk, though, before we dive into these trades. Mark, you and I talked what feels like forever ago. I guess it was just a few weeks, though.
Yeah.
About the Bulls hiring Billy Donovan. I came on your podcast the night that it happened, and we chatted about it. Now you've had some time to really dig in to understand who Billy Donovan is. I'm sure the Bulls media up there has covered it extensively. Now that the dust has settled a bit, what are I guess, did we ever get actual numbers on how much they're paying Billy and how long he's going to be there for?
I believe it's a 4-year deal and it's $6 million per season. So in that way, I don't think it shifts too much from what he was on at the Thunder. So I was somewhat surprised, to be honest with you. I thought he would have got a pay bump given he was co-coach of the year based on the coaches awards, I guess. So I was surprised to see that they got him for that amount, to be honest, given that they paid Fred Hoiberg in the past $5 million per season. And similarly for Tom Thibodeau, I believe he was on $5 million per season when he came on board. So, I was somewhat surprised that Billy came at that amount. But look, I'll take it. Not my money.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds almost exactly like what his deal in Oklahoma City was as well. But now that the dust has settled a bit, just tell me some of your thoughts on getting Billy as coach. Obviously, we've also started to hear recently now that he's been making phone calls to assistants. What was it that he said that they are going to, quote, go in a different direction, I think, which is a really polite way to say you're fired.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts now of Billy now that everything's kind of settled down?
Well, look, going back to when he was hired, I suppose, and when we had our conversation, I was quite positive about the move at that point because I just assumed the Bulls were going to go down the path of hiring an unexperienced guy, someone, you know, an assistant coach from another team to come in and sort of take this rebuild hopefully forward. And that's typically been their MO. They've always gone and brought in an assistant coach, whether it's, you know, Tom Thibodeau, whether it was Jim Boylan. Fred Hoiberg, I suppose, was outside of the NBA coaching circles, but it was a first-time hire, so to speak. So I just expected the Bulls to be hiring someone like Wes Unseld Jr., something like that. He was heavily touted to the role. Obviously had some a connection with Arturis Karnašovas. There was only two names linked to the Bulls job that had any sort of experience at all in terms of coaching in the NBA, and that was Kenny Atkinson and then Billy Donovan when he became available. And I guess the minute Billy did become available, I was pretty keen on landing him. I had no expectations that the Bulls would, just because I assumed he would be not interested in the job, but obviously he took the job. So I was pretty pleased about that fact that the Bulls brought in an experienced coach, because I think that's just super important for where this team is at right now. We're going to year four of the rebuild. It's kind of a make or break. Like, there's two ways this thing could go. They either continue building this roster, or they maybe tear it down and maybe start rebuilding again. So having someone, an experienced guy coming in and maybe helping set that path where hopefully they can continue building on it rather than having to tear it down again. I think just having someone of Billy's sort of... the fact that he's just ultra professional, just super competent, that's something that we haven't had in Chicago for quite a while. So that aspect of it was super encouraging to me the minute it happened. But then when we had our conversation and you took me through the pros and cons of Billy Donovan, again, that's just not a coach that we've had in Chicago for so long. So I'm quite high on the hiring. It makes complete sense that Billy Donovan is sort of revamping his coaching staff. I didn't expect him to sort of just take on board the coaching staff that Boylan did have in place. And to be fair to Boylan, I don't think he had a lot of assistants around him. So it'll be interesting to see, one, who Billy brings in to replace the assistant coaches he's sort of let go. But to you know, further to that, to see if he's actually has a more beefed up staff. So I think last year the Bulls only had one player development coach on the roster, or part of the coaching staff. So how it all shakes out, who goes in there, what positions are ultimately sort of shaped around Billy Donovan, that's going to be very intriguing to me, a Bulls fan. But yeah, that from this point for going forward, I've been pretty happy with the hire. Obviously, the real stuff starts when the season starts, but at this point, it's all positive.
Has there been any talk up there about maybe who Billy Donovan will bring in, or is that still a mystery as far as assistant coaches are concerned?
Look, I haven't seen anything being reported at this point. I don't think there's any, there hasn't been any names sort of connected to the job at this point. I guess one, I would assume maybe that Billy will talk to maybe Mo Cheeks. And obviously, he was part of the OKC staff with him during Billy's time. So I would wonder if he might try to bring him over to Chicago. But in terms of specific names that have been linked to the roles, I think it's probably too early in the process at this point. There's been no real names connected from my vantage point that I've seen. So we'll see how it shakes out over the next few days. But at this point, I think it's all pretty fresh.
Definitely. That was two names that I was going to mention. One of them you just said, the other being Brian Keefe, who is a longtime Thunder assistant. Actually left the Thunder for a while and went to New York to coach with Derek Fisher, if you remember those days when Derek Fisher was the coach of the New York Knicks.
Yeah.
And then came back to Oklahoma City. And Brian Keefe, I think, is starting to be seen as like a top assistant or a head coaching candidate in some coaching circles. So I would be interested to see if he brings Mo Cheeks or Brian Keefe up to Chicago, especially now that the Thunder are looking to hire a new coach who might want to bring his own guys in as well. So
yeah.
Those guys might be kind of out there in limbo and willing to come up to Chicago with Billy should those offers be extended. So I think that'll be interesting to kind of keep an eye on. Mo Cheeks, hell of a guy. I absolutely love, from what I know about the guy, just he seems absolutely incredible. Kind of known as the guard whisperer here in Oklahoma City. He was the one that really worked with Russell Westbrook, had a great relationship with Chris Paul, and also had a really good relationship with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So with some of those young guards up there in Chicago, Mo Cheeks might be actually a really, really good fit.
Yeah, correct. And it makes complete sense based on how OKC sort of shaped the roster last season. There are some synergies between the Thunder and the Bulls in that sense from a guard point of view. I mean, a lot of the scoring will be coming from the Bulls' backcourt going forward, I would imagine, with Zach LaVine and Kobe White. So in that sense, yeah, it probably does make some sense. We'll see what Mo Cheeks wants to do, if who else Billy may be interested in. But yeah, that connection is obvious and makes sense for the Bulls. But we'll see if it makes sense for Mo Cheeks.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right, well, let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about what you perceive the Bulls' goals next year to be. Obviously, this is, like you've mentioned, a rebuilding team with a lot of youth. It does have a decent blend of some veteran leadership there as well. I think there was high hopes for the 2019-2020 season that they just drastically underwhelmed with. But now with young guys like Coby White, who are on the come up, obviously Zach LaVine is a certified bucket. What are the goals for the Bulls next season? Is it to push and make the playoffs in the East? Is it still just to develop those young guys? And if we don't make the playoffs, we'll get a lottery pick in the stacked 2021 draft. What do you think the Bulls are thinking about their goals for next season?
Yeah, this is a super interesting question, because I don't really know the answer, because one, Arturis Karnišovas typically is pretty coy with his strategy. We don't even really know how he feels about specific players at this point. He's very, very guarded, keeping things very close to the vest, so to speak. So I don't really know what his plan will be. I know he and Mark Eversley, the new GM, have talked about how they like the talent on the roster, how the talent on this roster has sort of underperformed last season, and they expect those guys to come around and grow. But whether that's to keep them around or maybe package them up in a trade, I don't really know. But as I sort of alluded to before, we're coming into year four of the rebuild. It's kind of make or break time. I mean, Zach LaVine has 2 years left on his deal. Lauri Markkanen has been in the league 3 years now. He's extension eligible. What do we have in Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter as a two-man tandem up front? We don't really know, because a lot of these guys haven't actually shared the floor a lot together, given that injuries have plagued the Bulls for the last two or three seasons. So in that sense, I'm not really sure. And part of the reason I say that, and I guess it sort of alludes to the Billy Donovan hiring as well, is I would assume the Bulls would be trying to build onto what they already have rather than maybe tearing it down again. So in that sense, I would assume that they're aiming towards the playoffs. That would be my guess. They don't have a lot of cap space coming up in this specific offseason, so the roster itself is going to look very similar to what it did last season. There'll be some movements around the margins there, but I think by and large the key pieces will remain. And I would imagine that's the case, particularly for someone like Billy Donovan. I don't believe he's coming here to coach a rebuild. That doesn't make sense to me, given obviously he left OKC, and OKC maybe headed down that path. And like I mentioned before, the Bulls really have two avenues to go from going forward. Do they keep building, or do they tear it down because maybe these players on the rosters aren't necessarily good enough? But I would lean to the Bulls maybe building on it. One, because they got Billy Donovan through, an experienced coach who probably wants to win now as soon as possible. And two, I guess the biggest fear amongst Bulls fans going into this whole offseason was how ownership would be reacting to this whole COVID situation. And we just all assumed that they would be putting away their money, maybe even, you know, cutting costs here and there. And we didn't necessarily expect them to get someone like Billy Donovan paying a coach $6 million a season, because an assistant coach from another team is, you know, significantly cheaper. And you know, they have obviously committed to Billy Donovan. That's positive to see. As we sort of just talked before, Billy Donovan, he's reshaping his coaching staff. That's going to cost the ownership a little bit more money than what maybe would have been otherwise. And you know, even getting through Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley, that wouldn't have come cheap either. So it would appear that ownership is willing to pay some money here. I didn't expect that to be the case. They're forking out dollars. Billy Donovan probably wants to win as soon as possible. So I would assume the plan is develop the roster, hopefully get into the playoffs as a 7th or 8th seed. That would be my guess. As to whether that's with the current players on the roster or not, that remains to be seen. But I'm assuming they want to push this rebuild forward rather than maybe tearing it down again.
Nice. So then let's talk about their offseason. Obviously, like you mentioned, new GM, not really knowing how he feels about certain players, what direction they're going to go. But I want to list off some of the free agents that Chicago has this offseason. And I want you to tell me if, just, I guess, gut feeling, do you think that player is coming back to Chicago, or do you think the Bulls are going to part ways? First one, Chris Dunn.
Yeah, this is going to be a really interesting one because I think Chris Dunn's value is probably somewhere in the vicinity of $6 to $9 million, somewhere in that range. He had a really positive defensive season, on offense less so, but he clearly established himself as one of the better perimeter defenders in the NBA. He just missed out on an all defensive team. So in that sense, he has value as a backup guard who can just bring you, you know, elite defense. But as to whether he will be in Chicago or not, that's interesting because I think the value that he will command on the market is sort of a similar type paycheck to what you might get from a contending team that has the mid-level exception on offer. So I probably lean at this point to Chris Dunn not being part of the Bulls roster next season. He wasn't part of the Bulls mini camp that the team has just gone through now, part of the scrimmages that the team is sort of going through. In part, one, because he has free agency coming up, but two, he's sort of still recovering from his knee injury from this season. So I would assume Chris Dunn is not part of the roster next season, but I think a lot of that's going to be determined by what they do at the draft. If they take a guard, then, you know, less reasons to keep Chris Dunn around. But maybe if they go wing or big, then maybe they do keep him around. But I'll probably lean to them not doing so at this point.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I did not realize Chris Dunn is already 26 years old.
Yeah, he's 27 in March. So he's going to be, he's essentially a finished product. I mean, there will be some improvements here and there, but he's not a 22-year-old, let's say.
He's older than Zach LaVine. Wow,
yeah,
I did not realize that. That's surprising. Okay, next guy, Denzel Valentine.
Yeah, this is another interesting one. Again, a one-sided player, very capable on offense when given the opportunity. You know, a very good catch-and-shoot player, a really good passer. Has his limitations, but I don't know how much of a role he will have going forward. It remains to be seen. He probably can fit on an NBA roster in certain situations. Very much is not a defensive player at all. One of the worst defenders in the NBA that I've seen. But I don't know. I can't imagine Denzel Valentine getting anything more than $3 or $4 million, something like that. Maybe even anything more than the vet minimum, to be honest with you. So I think it's a chance Valentine sort of sticks around. If Boylan was the coach, then I would say definitely not. Those two did not see eye to eye. But I think with Billy Donovan and this team not necessarily having many shooters around, then Valentine does have a place on this roster. But again, it'll come down to what they do at the draft. But at this point, I'll tentatively say that he sticks around for maybe 2 years on a cheap deal.
Okay, awesome. And then the third one I wanted to talk about, Shaq Harrison.
Yeah, this is, again, very interesting in what happens with Chris Dunn. I think what they do with Dunn will ultimately determine what they do with Shaq Harrison to a degree, because they are very similar players. You know, very good defensive players, ball hawks on defense, give you absolutely nothing on offense. And even though they're listed as point guards, 6'4" point guards, they're more so your shooting guard types, in the sense that they can't really do anything off the bounce. You don't necessarily want the ball in their hands because they're not great decision makers. So they're not really point guards in that way. So if you keep Chris Dunn around for, say, $6 million, $7 million, whatever it might be, then it probably doesn't make sense to have Shaq Harrison taking up a roster spot when he can give you 70% of what Chris Dunn does, or vice versa. If you get rid of Chris Dunn, then maybe it makes more sense to keep someone like Shaq Harrison around. But ultimately, it will determine what they do with Chris Dunn. I think if they keep him, then Shaq Harrison's gone. If they don't, then maybe Harrison sticks around.
Interesting. Okay, so it's almost going to be a one or the other type of situation then.
That's, to me, if I was running the show, that's what I would be definitely doing. And personally, I would be keeping Shaq Harrison on a 3-year deal and sort of getting 60 to 70% of that value that Chris Dunn provides, and maybe using that, you know, that available space, whether it's on a cap space or an exception on, not on Chris Dunn, let's say, but more so on a player who comes in on the wing who can provide some shooting and maybe some semblance of defense. I think that's what the Bulls need more so, because, you know, if you got Shaq Harrison, you don't need both of Shaq Harrison and Chris Dunn. It's kind of redundant at that point.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. All right, well, then that leads us to my last question before we move on to the trades. The Bulls are currently sitting at fourth in the NBA draft. You've kind of mentioned some of the things that this roster kind of needs to round out the team. what do you think they do with that fourth pick? Do you think they're pretty bought into making a selection there? Do you think there's a decent chance they try to trade the pick and maybe move back or just trade out of the draft altogether? And if they stay at four, who do you like them to take there?
Yeah, look, I don't think they'll trade out. That seems, at least past, going back on, you know, how the Bulls have operated in the past, and maybe that's less relevant now given the change of management, but previously they haven't really ever traded out of draft, so I don't see that being the scenario. Maybe even less so that they jumped up from 7th or 8th in the draft up to number 4. It would be a tough sell, I think, particularly for someone like Karnašovas, who this will be his first real big play in terms of shaping the roster, so it would be a big call for him to trade out of it. So I don't see that happening. Maybe they try trading up, maybe they try trading down, but I think the most likely scenario is that they stick at number 4. And if they do, I would imagine they don't go big. Karnašovas has talked about just wanting the best player available. And, you know, maybe he determines that the best player available at number 4 is Obi Toppin or James Wiseman or someone like that, which would be tough, again, for fans to swallow, given that the Bulls have sort of gone through a 3-year rebuild here. And, you know, 2 years out of those 3 years, the Bulls have used their number 7 pick on 2 traditionally sized bigs in Larry Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. So to have 3 of the 4 years that you've been in the lottery being inside the top 7 and to use another pick on a big guy, that would be, for me at least, it would be tough to handle. We'll see what AK does, but I think that they need to at least consider fit. And now maybe fit and best player available in this instance cross over to some degree. And they definitely need wings on this roster. I mean, the biggest issue with the Bulls last season was that they had no available wings really at all last season because Otto Porter missed most of last season. Chandler Hutchinson, a former first-round pick, he's been very injury-prone through his 2 seasons. He was quite injured last season as well, which meant guys like Chris Dunn, Ryan Arcidiacono, Shaq Harrison, these sorts of guys that are 6'4 or under, they played a lot of time at small forward. We even had matchups where Ryan Arcidiacono was checking Giannis when we were matching up against the Bucks, which was...
Giannis is like 2 of Ryan Arcidiacono.
Yeah, exactly. So it's highly problematic, let's say. So the Bulls definitely need some wings to come through this team, whether that's Isaac Okoro, whether it's Devin Vassell, whether it's Denny Avdija. I don't know where AK will lean. I would assume he probably leans Avdija, just based on at least my impression of Avdija, that he's probably the most rounded of all those guys. He may not have an elite skill in any facet of his game at this point, but he can sort of do a little bit of everything. Whereas with Vassell or Okoro, you got some legitimate, I guess, issues or red flags that you maybe need to consider. So I think they definitely need to think about wings, and if it's not wings, then it has to be a guard, someone like, well, maybe LaMelo Ball. We'll see how it all plays out. Maybe he falls somewhat, but I don't know if he falls beyond the top 2 or 3 picks. I think that may be wishful thinking, but if it's not LaMelo Ball, then maybe it's someone like Killian Hayes. I think that may be a nice sort of backup option. So to me at least, they need to be thinking guards. Or they need to be thinking wings. I'm not necessarily interested in the bigs in this draft. They're probably less relevant to the Bulls, but may make sense for some other teams. But yeah, again, we'll see. It's hard to know at this point because we just don't really know a lot about AK, how he wants to go through this whole thing, what type of play he prefers, all that aspect. We're kind of learning on the fly at the moment.
Definitely. And you mentioned my 2 guys right there. I know... my number 1 guy in this draft, the dude, like, you ask anybody who listens to The Uncontested, they will talk to you about how much of a man crush I have on Denny Avdija. And I know he's been mocked to the Bulls at 4 a lot, which makes sense. He can slide into that 3, but he can play some small ball 4. I love Denny's game. Like you mentioned, he is such a rounded player. I think he can almost be like a point forward in a sense. But I wanted to ask you about LaMelo. Like, do you think the Bulls are high on LaMelo? To the point where they would be like maybe willing to trade 4 and like a small asset to move up and maybe get Golden State's pick at 2 and take LaMelo?
Again, tough to answer because I would say the old regime would definitely not be into LaMelo at all from a character standpoint. Maybe someone like Karnašovas is more, I guess, more prepared to take that risk. It's hard to say. So all we really know from Eversley and Karnašovas in terms of the type of player they like, and it's the same. What they've said is pretty much what anyone else would say. So obviously guys that like to play fast, guys who like to move the ball, guys who can shoot, guys that can play defense. So, I mean, that's very generic. It's very high level. And in some senses, you know, LaMelo fits that case. In some senses, he certainly doesn't. So I don't know if they're prepared to trade any future assets to go up and grab LaMelo. Obviously, depends on where LaMelo is sort of situated to go. I personally probably wouldn't go and do that myself. I don't know if LaMelo is that good of a talent to maybe, you know, jump up from 4 to 2 and risk a or put together a future asset in a deal for LaMelo Ball. Maybe you do that, maybe you don't. But personally, I don't see the need of trading up in this specific draft. Maybe in a couple drafts ago, then yeah, I'm definitely trading up for someone like Luka Doncic or something like that, or even Ja Morant when the Bulls, I think, should have done that. That was probably the draft to do it. Trading up now in this specific draft, I think it's kind of a risk. LaMelo definitely has some elite skills, some that I would definitely, that definitely fit on this specific team. But I have my concerns about LaMelo Ball, and I wonder how kind of Shovis feels about him too. So I think it's more likely that they stay at number 4 and maybe draft someone like Denny. I think that kind of makes sense.
Definitely. And I think what I just said was maybe a little misleading. I told you I had two guys in this draft that I love. One of them was Denny, and then I asked you about LaMelo, which probably leads a lot of people listening to think that LaMelo was my other guy. LaMelo was not my other guy. I do not like LaMelo Ball very much at all. My other guy was Killian Hayes, and I think Killian would be awesome in Chicago. A lefty, he's drawing a lot of like Manu Ginobili-style comparisons. He has that step-back J. He can make all the passes. I think pairing a guy like Killian with Kobe White in that backcourt could be a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, look, I mean, he's probably the safer option if you're talking LaMelo or Killian Hayes. I would assume maybe he's not safer, but I have a lot more confidence in him just being a solid NBA player, whereas for someone like LaMelo, that could just go a million ways. I mean, LaMelo will walk into the NBA and potentially have two elite skills straight off the bat. I mean, his passing and his dribbling, you know, his ball handling skills are just going to be elite from day dot, but it's kind of all the other stuff that are just a big question mark, whereas someone like Killian Hayes, maybe he doesn't have the upside of someone like LaMelo if LaMelo can sort of put it together, but I have a lot more confidence in him just being the steadying force, I guess, and just having more of more assurance, I suppose, that he will sort of reach whatever sort of maximum he has in his game. Maybe it's not as high as LaMelo, but I'd have more confidence in him reaching that level, I suppose. So, yeah, someone like Hayes would be a really nice fit. I mean, particularly with either Zach LaVine or Kobe White, because both of those guys are very similar. Their skills cross over quite a bit, whereas Killian is a little bit different in the sense that he's probably more of a pick and roll master in the sense, and more so in terms of creating for others. I think that's the key difference between someone like Killian Hayes and Kobe White and Zach, who are very good at maybe getting their own score, but not so great at creating for others. And that's obviously quite problematic when you've started your rebuild around two big men like Larry Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. So to have someone like Killian Hayes come through who can, you know, get his own buckets through pick and rolls, but maybe even more importantly, create plays for others, specifically Larry Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr., then that's the intrigue there for sure.
Definitely. I love it. All right. Well, Mark, let's get to the part of the podcast that everyone wants to hear, and that's us playing around on the trade machine and coming up with trades. But before we get there, let's take a quick second and tell our listeners about our sponsors for the week. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. Like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it and fast. Try Indeed out with the free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. So again, go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th. The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at the games this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline's going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. And don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, it is time to jump into some trades.
Deal.
It's a disaster. Take trading, disaster.
So, Mark, I think we start off with the biggest one here, which is probably discussing if there's any way to get Chris Paul to the Bulls. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's where we have to start, mate. That's the one that makes most sense to me.
Okay, perfect. So let's do it then. Obviously, the big thing for the Thunder is the size of Chris Paul's contract, owed $41.3 million next season. The Bulls are going to have to match within 125% of that. And you and I talked about this whenever I came on your podcast to talk about the hiring of Billy Donovan. But there's some interesting crossover here. Chris Paul obviously has a very good relationship with Billy Donovan. If Billy pulls, like we mentioned earlier, maybe a Mo Cheeks from Oklahoma City up to Chicago, Chris has a good relationship with Mo Cheeks. Also, Chris would come to Chicago not only to elevate that team, because Chris is really damn good, but also to mentor the young guys, specifically Coby White, who Chris Paul has a relationship with, as Coby White played on Chris's AAU team. As before, you know, Kobe obviously got to college. So there's a lot of interesting crossovers there. So I think that makes a Chris Paul deal to Chicago pretty interesting.
Look, 100%. And you are preaching to the choir, because I am a Chris Paul homer. I love the man. So I would definitely like to see this happen for the reasons you stated. But even expanding on that, I mean, like I said before, this is year four of the Bulls rebuild. And this is going into year four where the team just hasn't really had a credible point guard option. And like I said before, this is a team that sort of started its rebuild around two young big men. And those two young bigs, who are always going to be highly assisted type players in terms of them scoring their own baskets, they just haven't had a point guard who can necessarily set up the ball for these guys. And you know, we've had Chris Dunn come through as point guard, Jerry and Grant, Cameron Payne. I mean, There's probably others that I kind of hopefully have erased from my mind who have definitely had zero impact on this team. But I just can't imagine being a player like Larry Markkanen or Wendell Carter trying to find my way in the league, trying to find my way within an offense whilst also playing with a backcourt that kind of doesn't know what it's doing. So in that sense, Chris Paul would just be a massive upgrade from an IQ standpoint on the Bulls, for the Bulls on the floor, because this team just more generally just hasn't been a smart basketball team for quite some time. So to get in a player like Chris Paul, who is arguably the smartest player in the league, like you said, has relationships with someone like Coby White, which is very, you know, if Coby's going to be someone that's part of the Bulls' plans long term, then that mentorship would be huge. To me, it just makes complete sense. I know some Bulls fans have reservations based on Chris Paul's contract and the fact that that would probably take the Bulls out of the running, any running in the 2021 free agency pool, where players like Giannis, Kawhi, Paul George, etc. may or may not be available. I understand their perspective as to why you wouldn't want Chris Paul and maybe to sort of take up that cap space. But for me, again, maybe I'm biased, but I think the first step here needs to be just establishing the Bulls as some sort of professional-looking team, and doing so without an actual point guard in the backcourt, one that can sort of orchestrate the entire offense, then it's kind of hard to ask this Bulls team to be a true credible threat to maybe make the playoffs. And it, like I said before, Kobe White and Zach LaVine, there's a lot of crossover between those guys. They are high scoring guards, don't necessarily create well for others, and it's just a problem in more generally schematically of how the Bulls have sort of built this team up until this point, where someone like CP3, based on how good he was this season, he could maybe unlock this team to a degree. So it makes sense, and I think the Bulls actually have some pieces here on the on their specific roster to make this trade sort of happen as well.
Definitely. And you know, all that, not even mentioning just the overall leadership aspect of Chris Paul. I know I kind of preached to you on the Bulls HQ pod about just the leader that Chris Paul is. Like, man, after how successful the bubble is, I tweeted this the other night. Put Adam Silver and Chris Paul on the presidential ticket on November 3rd. I'll vote for them in a heartbeat. I mean, just Chris is an absolutely incredible leader. I think not only bringing that IQ and that democratic form of basketball to Chicago, but just being the leader in the locker room for that team, somebody that everybody rallies around and knows, like, this is the guy that's going to take us where we want to get. In my viewpoint, if the Bulls trade for Chris Paul, I have a very, very hard time seeing them not making, like, the 6 or the 7 seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs next season. I just think he's that good.
I would kind of agree, and that would be the one time in the last how many years where I'd be actually confident in the Bulls actually taking that step forward, and not from feeling silly about making such a prediction, where I've maybe in the past I have made such a prediction and felt a little bit silly, you know, 10, 20 games into the season, realizing that, yeah, this team isn't winning 35 games. Okay, I mean, not coming anywhere close to it. But with someone like Chris Paul, I think he would unlock the rest of the roster, because Zach LaVine could sort of get back off the ball a bit. He wouldn't have to then maybe dominate the ball like he has in the past. So his usage could still remain so high, and he could still finish off plays. But in terms of him having to create all the plays, that just unburdens him, and maybe his game goes to another level. I mentioned Larry Markkanen before, Wendell Carter, but you could even play some 3-guard lineups like the OKC Thunder did this season with CP3, and maybe there's less defense with between a CP3, Zach LaVine, and Kobe White sort of trio versus, you know, one with CP3, Dennis Schroeder, and SGA. But you can still do that. You can still try that. You can still experiment with that, and that would be interesting. Particularly, like I mentioned before, the Bulls don't really have a ton of wings on this specific roster at present. So there's that synergy between the Bulls and Thunder too. The fact that the way the Thunder sort of got around that was to play those 3-guard lineups. Obviously, Lou Dort came on big towards the back end of the season. But that, again, is another appeal to me. Like, I've always been a big proponent of playing multiple guard lineups. That's something I just generally believe in. Having someone like Paul sitting next to Zach LaVine, maybe bring Kobe White off the bench and at times have them all playing together, I think that would be really interesting.
I think that would work out great. And you have the coach that ran that 3-guard lineup.
Exactly.
And you know, from a Thunder perspective, that 3-guard lineup, whenever they were on the court together, that was the best. I think it was the best 3-man lineup, and I think those three plus Danilo Gallinari, Steven Adams, was the best 5-man lineup in the league. Incredibly clutch. And the thing was, it's not like the ball was zipping around the court because you had 3 guards out there. They were very, very good at attacking and kicking and getting one of those 3 guards in a mismatch and then letting them work. Whether it be a big being on Dennis Schroeder who can just blow by right by them, whether it be Chris Paul being able to get somebody in the mid-range, or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander being able to use his slithery, like, kind of unorthodox moves to the rim. They didn't have a lot of assists in that sense, but they were able to create mismatches and then exploit those mismatches time and time and time again. And I could see, like you mentioned, the exact same thing happening with a 3-guard lineup of Chris, LaVine, and Kobe White. So that would be really fascinating. So Mark, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we're going to have to throw Otto Porter Jr. in here just so we can start getting close to salary matching. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and that's the only way this trade really happens. I mean, Otto Porter has a player option. I think he's owed about $28.5 million for next season.
Yeah, he's not turning that down.
Yeah, I would be absolutely floored if he turned that down based on the fact that he's had so many injuries, well, particularly last season, but even the back end of his first season in Chicago. I would be absolutely stunned if he was to turn down that money.
Yeah, especially in a weak free agent class where there's not a lot of teams with cap space. Yeah, he is cashing those checks, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. So assuming he opts in, then yes, he's going to be the central point from a Chicago point to make this deal work. He's owed $28.5 million, like I mentioned. Chris Paul will be upwards of, you know, 40, somewhere in that range. So, yeah, to make this work money-wise, Otto Porter needs to be involved.
For sure. And then we can throw one more player in there to get the money exactly where it needs to be. And one of those two players could be Thad Young, Tomas Satoransky, or we could even go Felicio and then maybe throw another small contract in there. What do you think the Bulls are most likely to do in that situation? My initial assumption would be Tomas Satoransky, just because the Bulls already have so many guards, especially if they're bringing in Chris now. But you correct me if I'm wrong. Do you think Satoransky is a better fit to stay in Chicago and them to ship out somebody like Thad Young instead?
Yeah, again, it kind of determines what they do at the draft. And you know, if this trade were to happen, if it was before or after the draft, then maybe that's a key determinant as well. But a lot of that will be determined by the draft. But in this specific sense, just assuming based on the current roster that they have on hand, then it probably does make sense at this point to just throw in Tomas Satoransky. I think that makes more sense. He would take, or Chris Paul would take all his minutes. Probably doesn't make sense to keep Sato at that point, and maybe then you reconsider, and maybe you think about maybe keeping Chris Dunn, maybe you don't. But yeah, so replacing a point guard like Satoransky with a point guard like Chris Paul makes more sense. Thad Young earns maybe $2 or $3 million more per season, so if the money needs to maybe move around a little bit, then maybe that's where Thad Young becomes more applicable to a team like the Thunder. And Thad sort of makes sense for the Thunder in the sense that he's, you know, a long athletic player, just the ultimate professional, a good community member. He just strikes me as a very Thunder type player. But so does Satoransky. So I think either or would be applicable in this situation. And importantly, even though both signed to 3-year deals, that third year for both of them is only somewhat guaranteed. So from a Thunder perspective, you would have some pretty instantaneous cap relief beyond this season, potentially, you know, obviously depending on what you do with Satoransky, but Otto Porter would be a free agent. Maybe if you decline the option, or not necessarily decline the option, but there's only a partial guarantee for Satoransky or Thad Young, it would free up the Thunder's cap position quite quickly beyond next season. So either or makes total sense in this trade.
Definitely. So let's do Satoransky then. And just those two players, Porter and Satoransky, really get us to where the money needs to be. Now, the Bulls would be taking on about $3 million in this deal. But in order to like make the trade actually happen, this is well within, like the money is close enough to make it happen. So then we're just talking, what is the asset the Thunder gets back in return for this trade? Mark, I will tell you right now, the Thunder are interested in draft picks. Like that number 1, 2, and 3 on the list is draft picks. It is very obvious that the Thunder are not going to get pick number 4 from the Bulls in 2020 for Chris Paul. That would be absurd. So are we talking the 2021 first? Are we talking later down the line first? Where do you think the Bulls would be looking here?
Well, look, the Bulls have all their first-round picks going forward, so there's no issues of owing picks elsewhere that maybe you have to delay it until 2025 or something like that. So in that sense, it could be as early as next season. Like you rightly said, it won't be this number 4 pick. That's probably too much to throw in for a trade for CP3. But, you know, whether it's a future pick, 21, 22, that remains to be seen. But I would be interested in maybe throwing that pick in, assuming it has some sort of protections on it. We could argue about what those protections would need to be, but that's probably going to be the ultimate determinant in terms of who gets Chris Paul and maybe who has the lightest protections on those picks, or if maybe even if a team offers multiple picks, whatever it may be. That's probably going to sway the Chris Paul trade, I would imagine. Now, me being someone who is maybe similar to the Thunder, loves their draft picks and maybe wants to be a little bit more conservative about it, maybe I would miss out on a Chris Paul trade because the protection on it, I would want, at least to make me feel somewhat comfortable, would maybe be too extreme for the Thunder, and maybe they go looking elsewhere. But I would be okay with putting on the table a 21 or 22 draft pick, assuming that there's some decent protections on it.
Beautiful. So I don't know what the Thunder exactly are looking for, but here's my thought. The 2021 class is loaded.
Yeah.
And especially the top end talent in that draft. I mean, there's people already saying that this 2021 draft might be one of the best drafts in like the past 20 years. one of the most prized and coveted players in 2021, Cade Cunningham, actually playing his college ball about 60 minutes away from the Chesapeake Energy Arena. And I can promise you that Sam Presti is going to have a hotel room in Stillwater, Oklahoma, to watch Cade Cunningham play all season long. Now, the Thunder have their own pick in 2021. They also have the better of the two picks. Well, technically, they get the two of the best. How do I word this? The two picks that are the best of the following three. The Thunder pick, the Miami pick, and the Houston pick. My assumption is that the Thunder pick is going to be pretty good because the Thunder are going to suck next year because they want to trade away everybody. And then I would think that Houston probably has a worse regular season than Miami. Number one, because Houston's older. Number two, because Miami plays in the East. And so I think the Thunder are going to end up with their own pick and Houston's pick next season. If they could also get a protected 2021 from the Bulls and use all three of those picks in 2021 to trade up to possibly get the number one overall pick or a number two overall pick, I think that's where the Thunder get the star of the future. So far, this deal is Chris Paul for Satoransky and Otto Porter Jr. How do you feel about throwing the Bulls' 2021 pick in this deal, top 10 protected?
Yeah, I guess my biggest concern, and you mentioned Cade Cunningham, and I think this is kind of the irony of the Bulls situation, is that they may be trying to look at to progress at a time when maybe this is the right season to maybe go full on tank, like the Thunder are doing. Like, the Thunder have timed this pretty perfectly in that sense. So the Bulls really need that type of talent, the one that can take their franchise forward, and Cade Cunningham appears to be that type of player, which makes sense why the Thunder maybe are keen on rebuilding, and if he is the guy, then that would be a pretty damn good prize. So I guess my concern would be that maybe the Bulls, I don't know, maybe they get to a point where they maybe fall either side of that, and maybe for whatever reason their pick was to jump up in the top two or three, and then you lose that chance of Cade Cunningham. So maybe 10's might be a little bit too light for me. And maybe I was thinking lottery protected, something like that. It's very, very close. But, you know, it's obviously the difference between 10 and 14. But you may be able to twist my arm, I suppose.
So what if, and I know we're trying to look at this like realistically from the front office perspectives.
Yeah.
But just from you and I acting like we're the GMs. Which, God, that would be nice. I would like that pay increase. What if I just split the difference with you and we say top 12 protected?
See, I'd be more inclined to have like a cascading type protection beyond the years, so to speak. So, you know, in this 2021, it's maybe a lottery protected. 2022, maybe it's top 10 protected, you know, beyond, and then it's a top 8 protected, top 6, whatever it might be, something like that. Then maybe just committing to the pick landing in 21. That would be my, I guess, rebuttal. But you could maybe talk me into top 12. I think that's probably that's probably more an option. That's probably more relevant to the Bulls situation. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. If they do, then they probably fall in that 10, 11, 12 range. Oh, sorry, if they don't, then they fall in that 10, 11, 12 range. So it's kind of borderline. Ultimately, it will depend on what AK sort of has plans in terms of further moves, and that's something that they would have to be thinking when making a trade for like Chris Paul. Because it'd be one thing to just trade for Chris Paul and just sort of plant him on this specific roster and just going with this team going forward. But if you trade for Chris Paul, if you're not necessarily sure on what you want to do with Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen, then maybe you're making further trades where you bring in another type of player that's maybe not a superstar, maybe even not an all-star, but someone that's highly capable. And maybe this Bulls team looks very different in 12 months' time than what it currently looks like. So if the roster is standing put and all you're doing is really just adding Chris Paul and maybe the number 4 pick, then again, maybe the top 12 protection's tough for me. But if you're AK and you're thinking, no, let's continue to make trades, maybe we're trading the number 4 pick for an established player or something like that, then maybe you take the gamble and you say, yeah, let's do top 12.
Definitely. I think that makes sense. And I think from the Thunder's perspective here, and kind of the way I'm thinking is, like we've mentioned, the Chicago team is rebuilding and they do have very interesting young players that I think for instance, the Thunder own two future firsts from Houston and two pick swaps with Houston. And I think the Thunder's thought process in that was, push those picks out as far as possible, because once this Houston run with James Harden is over, they're screwed. Their youngest player is like 26 years old, and they don't control any of their future picks for like forever. Mm-hmm. So the Thunder said, screw it. Let's get their 2024 and 2026 picks. They might suck then, because they don't suck now, but they might suck then, and you might get some really good picks. Like, part of me, Mark, is actually like really worried because those Houston picks are top four protected. I think Houston might suck so bad that they're getting a top four pick in like 2026. There is a legit possibility of that happening. Flip side with Chicago. I think the later you push out those Chicago picks, when guys like Wendell Carter Jr., Kobe White, the number four pick, why did I just go blank on his name? Oh my gosh. The stretch four. Larry Markkinen. There we go. Jesus, that was bad. As those guys progress and get older, especially under a new front office regime and a new coaching staff, I think they get better and better. And so having a future Chicago pick actually diminishes the value rather than increases it. So I think for the Thunder's perspective, the most valuable Bulls picks are the ones in the close future, because those ones in 2024, 2025, 2026 might not be very good, because the Bulls might be back atop, you know, top four Eastern Conference team perennially for years and years as these guys start to age and really come into their own. So I definitely get where you're coming from, and let's, you know, maybe save the 2021 pick and push them out. I think the Thunder are going to have the opposite viewpoint on, let's get that pick as soon as possible, because if we get an unprotected Bulls pick in 2024, that might be pick number 25 in the draft.
I certainly understand why you would come to that conclusion, and I think it's more than fair to assume that. But coming back to something I said a little bit earlier, where this is year four of the Bulls rebuild, now maybe, and how this whole thing can maybe go two ways. Now maybe if you commit to Chris Paul, you're sort of committing to the team getting better, sort of pushing towards the playoffs, etc. But again, maybe this thing goes pear-shaped for the Bulls, wherein you're not offering Larry Markkinen an extension. Maybe he continues his form that he showed in year three, less so in his rookie season, and maybe he just looks like a kind of average type of player. Maybe Wendell Carter isn't anything more than a defensive specialist. I think he will be, but maybe he's not. Maybe you bring through Chris Paul. That doesn't work out. He's gone in a year or two, and then maybe you're sort of going back to that rebuilding situation, particularly given that Zach LaVine only has two more years on his deal. Do you look to trade Zach now before he maybe commands something close to a max offer, if not a max offer? So again, the Bulls situation is kind of at an interesting point. I can see where you're coming from as to, you know, with the nucleus that they have now, you add Chris Paul, maybe you add around the periphery of this roster, this team will maybe be building into something similar to like the Indiana Pacers, where in a year or two, they're a competitive team. They're winning 44, 46, 48 games, something like that. They're a fifth or sixth seed. And yeah, at that point, that pick is like the 17th, 18th, 20th pick in the draft, something like that. And it's a less sexy pick. But at the same time, I don't know, maybe this whole thing is going pear-shaped in Chicago. Maybe AK feels a little bit differently about it and maybe tears it all down. That's kind of what I'm trying to assess at this point as to where the Bulls are going. And maybe if you're training for Chris Paul, that would be a good indication that you're not maybe trying to tear it down. But I don't know, maybe that's something to think about in the back of your mind, that this could change very quickly in Chicago.
Very true. So still trying to negotiate on this pick. Let's say you still felt a little uncomfortable with it being top 12 protected. So what if it's lottery protected? The next, if it doesn't convey, then the 2022 pick becomes top 8 protected. Mm-hmm. And then 2020, if it still doesn't convey, 2023 becomes like top 5 protected. That way the Thunder are almost assured to at least get one first instead of it rolling over to like 2 seconds. Or yeah. is that still too?
No, that makes more. It makes more sense to me, I suppose. If again. When, for the Bulls, if you're making a trade like this of this magnitude for Chris Paul, you kind of need to know what your follow-up moves are going to be when you're making a deal like this. It can't obviously be a deal in isolation. So in that sense, if I'm trading for Chris Paul, I'm feeling confident that this roster is obviously going to take some steps. But with these players on the roster, or maybe you're trading them out for something else. So in that sense, as long as I can get some protection on that on that 21 pick, maybe lottery protected. That way, if the Bulls do miss the playoffs, which I still think is a fair chance of happening, probably the more likely scenario, then I'm comfortable with not maybe missing out on Cade Cunningham. But yeah, if that requires me to loosen up some of the protections in year two and three, then I'd be prepared to do that. And eight and maybe top four in 23, that kind of makes sense.
Awesome. I think the Thunder would be interested in that because it, I mean, still, I think, I don't know what the 2022 class looks like, but I, you know, a pick number 17 or 15 in 2021, I think is probably worth like pick 9 or 10 in 2020, right? Just because I think the 2021 class is so much deeper. So I think that does make a little bit of sense. And if you're comfortable, I think that's a deal that I would pull the trigger on.
Look, I would, because I, like I said, I'm a big Chris Paul fan. I think it makes sense for the Bulls' point of view. If you want to see what you have in your roster and you want to see these players reach their maximum levels, then the best chance for them to do so is not just to continuously add young guys. Like we talked about Killian Hayes before, if you just add a young point guard onto this situation and just hope it all comes together nicely, then I don't think it naturally works like that. Bringing through someone like Chris Paul will maximize the value of Zach LaVine, Larry Markkanen, and Wendell Carter, etc. You get the best out of the situation that you have currently. You can maybe build towards something bigger. You can reestablish the Bulls as a premier organization. This still is a large market team despite them maybe operating like a small market team at times. So there's a lot of benefits to it. I understand why some people probably don't want to do it, again, because of that final year of Chris Paul's deal where you maybe negate that 2021 free agency flexibility, but I'm under no delusions that Giannis is coming to Chicago, so I'm avoiding that. For the immediate plan, I'm going for Chris Paul. So
definitely. Do you think some of those fans, maybe if the front office has those hopes of 2021 free agency, do you think if Giannis just signs the extension that they just say, F it, let's go for it, let's make the Chris Paul trade?
It really depends on what fans you talk to, because I know there's some amongst the Bulls fans, there's some title or bust attitudes amongst Bulls fans based on what they sort of saw through the 90s. So a lot of fans have this idea that if you're not sort of building towards a title team or you don't have a title team, then everything is kind of worthless. So in that sense, for those particular people, they probably still think free agency because they would be lured by the fact that maybe you can get Kawhi if Kawhi becomes available. If he doesn't take his player option up with the Clippers, maybe Kawhi's available, someone else, whoever it may be. So I think there would still be fans amongst the Bulls community that would still be interested in playing with the whole free agency game, because that, I guess, gives you some hope that maybe you get through a Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving types sweepstakes where you just add two max guys to this type of roster and then there you go, there's your title contending team. Again, I'm probably more conservative and I don't expect that to occur, so that's why I'm more malleable to that situation. But yeah, in that particular instance, if Giannis were to maybe re-up with the Bucks for whatever that may be, a 1+1, 2+2, or whatever the deal looks like, then maybe some will come back to thinking, yeah, okay, let's trade for someone like Chris Paul, or if it's not Chris Paul, someone else. But I still think there will always be some level of, or some segments of our fan base, particularly with the new front office now, who think, no, let's keep playing the free agency game, particularly with AK on board. We'll swing we'll swing a big free agent and we'll finally land that big free agent in Chicago.
Very good. So any other trades you want to discuss? Anything that you had on your mind before we get out of here?
Look, I don't think so, because to be fair, like, I think the only other player that I'd probably be interested in from an OKC point of view is probably SGA, and I would assume he's pretty damn untouchable at this point.
Yeah. Sorry, bud. We're not discussing that one.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, look, he would be perfect next to someone like Zach LaVine. But yeah,
Shea fits almost anywhere, man.
He does. He does.
He's so versatile. Yeah. It's incredible.
He's going to be just exceptionally good. So I can understand why the Thunder would obviously not want to part with him, particularly if you head down the path of a rebuild. He's exactly who you want to keep around. Lou Dort is just money for OKC. So I can't imagine them ever wanting to part ways with him, particularly for what the Bulls have. So just looking at the rest of the roster, it probably doesn't make sense. I mean, Gallinari, who even knows if he's with the Thunder next season? doesn't really make sense for the Bulls to go after Schroeder because there's a lot of crossovers between him, LaVine, and Coby White.
I was about to say, he's very similar, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't really see a deal that makes sense at this point. So it really is, you know, something that, I guess the synergy here is Chris Paul, Billy Donovan. Does that make sense? Can the Bulls strike a deal? Maybe they can because they have the outgoing salaries to make it happen from a tax relief standpoint or just reducing the overall salaries for the Thunder. Maybe if we throw in a pick that makes sense, then a deal makes sense. But ultimately, like I said before, it'll come down to which team is prepared to give up more from a draft capital standpoint to land Chris Paul. Me, I'd be a little bit conservative about it, but maybe there's a team like the Knicks out there who are prepared to throw out, you know, number 8 in this draft and maybe a future pick or something like that.
I would love it. Okay, well, so you mentioned Shea's name and I shot you down, so here's your chance to shoot me down. But if you want to discuss deals for either of these two assets, I would legitimately be interested in seeing if we can form some sort of deal. Let's start with an asset we've already discussed, that number 4 overall pick. Mm-hmm. Taking Shea off the board but making future picks that the Thunder have available. Do you think there's any interest at all in trading that number 4 pick?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, look, the Thunder have just a million picks coming their way. Picks, like you mentioned before, you mentioned Houston, and in 2024, 2025, maybe even sooner, the Houston situation looks kind of bad. So in that sense, those picks may have more value at that point than a pick number 4 in this specific draft. Now, I'm not necessarily a draft head. I don't really know what the 2023, 2024 class, etc. may or may not look like. So for me, I'm probably not interested in those picks just yet. Maybe when it's closer to that time, I'll be more interested in it or have more envy to how the Thunder are building. And look, I already do have a lot of envy as to how Thunder are going about it. I mean, Sam Presti is a genius. But at this point, I probably wouldn't be interested in any of those picks, again, because I'm somewhat conservative. And from a Bulls standpoint, we've been quite burnt from picks that have sort of protections on them or owed or have swaps on them in the past. I mean, we were waiting for years and years for the Bobcats pick, for the Sacramento Kings pick, and for years, we were sort of fantasizing about what those picks may or may not eventuate into, and they didn't really eventuate into anything. So there's a lot of promise around future picks, and I've been burnt with those, so maybe I'm a little skeptical at this point. So I probably am not doing a trade for number 4 for a future pick at this point, but maybe I'm foolish for thinking that.
No, that's totally fine, and I think that's really interesting. You know, those future picks, they could be anything. Yeah. And then once they actually come to fruition, a lot of times they're not as good as what you hoped they would be. And so that's why I'm fascinated with the Thunder's, you know, treasure trove of future firsts. When does Presti strike on those? You know, when do they have the most value? Is that those Houston picks, do they have more value now than they maybe will on draft night? And is it better to trade those picks whenever it could be anything versus waiting to find out what it's actually going to be, you know, and rolling the dice a little bit? It's the asset management for the Thunder over the next few years is going to be incredibly fascinating to see. Do they select players with these picks? Do they trade future picks to move up in earlier drafts or to go get another young player? Just the balance of all that is going to be really fascinating, I think, to try to decide when you capitalize on that asset. With that being said, the other asset that the Bulls have that I wanted to discuss to see, is there any sort of trade we can strike? I have a big man crush on Wendell Carter Jr., and I want to know what it's going to take to get him away from Chicago.
Well, I mean, so do I. I mean, Wendell is probably my favorite player on this roster at this point. I don't love any of the current Bulls at this moment. I don't have an affinity to any of them. But if there is one that I do, it is probably Wendell Carter. Ryan Arcidiacono is the other one, but I'm assuming you don't want him in a deal. But Wendell Carter Jr., it's an interesting situation because obviously the Thunder have Steven Adams. He's probably not here. He's not your long-term center, obviously, so I'd understand why you'd be interested in Wendell. I mean, building a defense around Wendell and SCA is just kind of unfair. That would be nasty good and just so versatile. My interest in maybe dealing Wendell Carter will maybe be determined by what the Bulls do at the draft. If they were to change or to draft a big, then maybe I'm more inclined to maybe think about trading Wendell Carter. But at this point, what are you prepared to offer, I suppose? Because he's just so key to me for this specific Bulls team. Because if you think about Zach LaVine, Kobe White, Larry Markkanen, there's not a lot of defense between those three guys. And when Wendell Carter plays, this Bulls defense looks somewhat respectable. You take him off and man, does it go bad pretty quickly. And I do think he has a lot of untapped potential offensively as well. So you're going to have to offer me something pretty good, because I think Wendell for this specific Bulls team is just so, so important.
Definitely. So I'm on the trade machine right now. Let me cook up some bullshit real quick and send it your way and see what you think. Thunder fans might hate me for throwing this together, but you know what? That's okay. What if we did? Is this going to work? This will work. Okay. The Bulls are actually saving $4 million in this deal. So I don't know if that means anything to you. What if the Bulls send over Otto Porter Jr. and Wendell Carter, the two juniors, Otto Porter Jr. and Wendell Carter Jr. in return, they get the Thunder's first rounder in 2020, which is pick number 25. They get a player that Thunder fans absolutely love and have a lot of hope in Darius Bazley. Can play the 3, the 4, actually played a little bit of 5 this year. And then we will also send you to keep that defense up high and let you battle with guys like Joel Embiid in the Eastern Conference. We'll send you Steven Adams.
I will have to respectfully decline on that one. I mean, how long do you think Steven Adams has left?
That's a great question.
Because he's not old, but he doesn't move well either.
Yeah, he, and especially it feels like he wears down as the season goes on, which has always been a big knock for Thunder fans. But you want to talk about a guy that's going to get, you know, Zach LaVine and Kobe White open shots all day long coming off of screens.
For sure.
I mean, he's, as Jimmy Butler said, strongest motherfucker in the league. So, but what if we swapped out and, well, I don't know, would it take like another future pick to make that happen?
Yeah, look, I'm not too... I definitely like Steven Adams. I love Steven Adams. I mean, just the personality is amazing. I definitely liked what I saw from Bazley towards the back end of last season or this season. I think he was showing signs as a stretch forward, even playing some 5. He's interesting to me. I guess it's that pick, the first round pick this season, which is coming from Denver, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that's a late first. That's probably the one that gives me a lot of pause, I suppose, and where I'd be less inclined to make this deal happen because of that specific pick. Obviously, Steven Adams is a long-term piece for the Bulls if they were to trade Wendell for him. Wendell certainly, I would hope, would be a long-term piece. Bazley is still a work in progress, someone I like, but again, is still a work in progress. And a late first for Wendell, personally, I wouldn't do it. Maybe there's some fans out there from a Bulls perspective who would. But yeah, for me, I'd probably have to pass unless that pick gets a lot juicier.
Yeah, so what if it's like one of those future Houston picks? That's kicking the can down the road quite a bit, obviously, 2024 or 2026. But like we just mentioned, I mean, there's a chance Houston sucks. Like, they could be really bad. There's a chance they couldn't as well. You know, it's definitely rolling the dice on a future asset there.
Yeah, that's true. And how long does Steven Adams' deal last for? How many more years?
This season, he's going to be expiring.
Okay.
So you're basically swapping Adams and Otto Porter Jr.
Yeah.
And then consequently then swapping Bazley and Wendell Carter Jr.
Yeah, look, and for that reason, if that's the case, and then that opens up free agency, then again, I'm sure there's a lot of fans that would be into that, because then that gives the Bulls that option of being a free agency player in 2021. Particularly if that's the case with Steven Adams' contract. So in that sense, I know a lot of fans would be interested in it. Me, I'll probably have to say no still at this point. Again, coming back to what I said before, at this specific point in time, those Houston picks don't look... Well, they look very intriguing, but I don't know what the value of them might be. Maybe I feel very differently about those Houston picks in sort of 12 months' time when maybe things go pear-shaped in Houston. Maybe even the Clippers start disbanding after a year or two, and then those picks become even more attractive. So we're talking about before in terms of Presti's decision of when he trades those picks. I think those picks maybe make more of a value play maybe in a year's time. Maybe they're more appealing at that point when it's more of a known quantity that the Clippers and the Houston Rockets are being derailed at that point, whereas now you're sort of just assuming that may be the case. So for me, I'll probably still hit no on that specific trade. If it was Lauri Markkanen, then maybe a different story. But for Wendell, like I said, for this team, for me personally, I feel I'm quite high on Wendell, so I'd have to pass.
Definitely, and I think you should be. I mean, he's only 21 years old, which is insane.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Still really young. And I mentioned this whenever I came on Bulls HQ. Wendell reminds me a lot of Al Horford, and you have the coach now that won two national titles with Al Horford. He knows how to utilize bigs that have some feel for the game and can pass and are good defenders. So I think Billy Donovan, if anyone's going to get a lot out of Wendell, I think it'll be Billy Donovan.
Yeah, and look, it would just be extremely difficult for me if this situation were to play out where you have SGA, you have Wendell, and you luck yourself into Cade Cunningham. I mean, that would be
tough. You just never forgive it.
Yeah. Like, if I was an executive that sort of signed off on that team, man, would I feel bad about it. So,
yeah, no,
I'm going to play the conservatively.
Beautiful. All right. Well, Mark, any parting thoughts before we get out of here?
Look, all I'll say is I'm pretty jealous of the Thunder situation. Look, like I said before, Sam Presti is extremely good at his job. I wanted him to come to Chicago. I wanted the Bulls to act like a big, darker team and just put it all on the line for Sam Presti before they went out and got kind of showbiz. Obviously, they didn't do that. I'm happy with the current situation. But just from being someone who's... I'm not in the detail about the Thunder like you are. I'm observing from the outside. And from my vantage point, all I would say is that if I was a Thunder fan, I'd be pretty confident about where this whole thing is headed, particularly obviously because Presti's leading this whole thing. But the assets that we've discussed that are on your side, you've already got SGA. You may have a really good pick in 2021. All those future picks coming through. I'm just, super envious of the Thunder, and I've just loved the way the Thunder have sort of gone about it essentially since their inception. So I'm sure you're feeling pretty confident, and over on my side, look, depending on how things go with the Bulls, I'll be watching with an envious eye, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, if there's anybody I trust with that treasure trove of draft picks in the league, it's probably Sam Presti. So yeah. We are pretty excited for, obviously this team will not be good maybe in the immediate future, but the possibility of building for longevity is definitely there, and so we are very, very excited about that. So, well... Hey, thank you so much again, Mark, for joining us. If you guys haven't already, go check out Mark's podcast. It's called Bulls HQ. You can also find his writing at bullshq.com. He does an awesome, awesome job. Part of the Blue Wire family, so go check him out. You can also follow Mark on Twitter. He is at MKHoops. Go give him a follow. Great stuff over there. We will be back with you again on Sunday night / Monday morning with our typical Monday morning podcast. So be on the lookout for that. If you haven't already, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts at. That way you can just get that episode downloaded immediately. You won't have to search it out. Leave a 5-star rating whenever you go to subscribe as well. That would mean a huge deal to us. Thanks again for Mark for coming on the show. Again, go give him a follow on Twitter at MKHoops. You guys have a great rest of your week. Please wash your hands, wear your masks, stay safe out there. We will talk to you soon. Thunder up.